Good morning, and welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Marisa DeMarco, a reporter here at KUNM. Today we're talking about the relationship between streetlights and public safety. Studies are showing that when a city invests in lighting dark places, crime rates can drop. But streetlights are not spread evenly across Albuquerque, and in some places troubled with high crime rates, there aren't enough lights or streetlights go out and stay broken for many blocks at a stretch. We want to hear from you this morning. Do you feel safe in your neighborhood? Are there enough streetlights where you live? Do you avoid unlit places? Have you called your city or county officials and asked for more or better lights? What happened? Join the conversation by calling 277-5866. You can tweet us, too, with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. Kathleen Burke works with Street Safe New Mexico, an organization that does outreach to women on the street, usually in the International District. Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning, Marisa.
Tell us a little bit about Street Safe. What kind of outreach do you do?
Street Safe does outreach to homeless women in the International District primarily. Our focus is on victims of sex trafficking crimes. And most of the street level work we do is in the International District, and we do policy work beyond that area to statewide level at the legislature, et cetera. We also work very closely with APD, trying to assure that the clients we serve are treated fairly and offered the same protection that the rest of the citizenry in the city is offered.
And so what does it look like? You go out on Friday afternoons, right? And what do you do?
We work out of our cars. We have a site in the International District at the former Fair and Square Market. And we offer the women on the street gently used clothing, hygiene products, items, harm reduction items, such as condoms, etc. We talk to the women. We find out what their problems are, what's going on in the neighborhood that's causing their lives to be difficult, whether it might be an attacker on the street or problems with law enforcement, which is rare. And we just try to make sure that they know that they're seen, that their voices are heard. And we take their voices to the higher levels when needed. When there are problems, we try to bring those problems to the attention of authorities.
And so a couple months ago, you reached out to a bunch of different government agencies about lights. What prompted you to do that?
We have one of our very close associates at Street Safe had been sexually assaulted at Altiz and Southern in the International District. And this is a few years back. And we were making a report about that to media. And they took me out to the site. And I saw that the site is very dangerous. No lighting. Residents very far away. So it was very clear to us that this certainly would be a site where sexual assaults could be happening. That was the start of it, was, you know, bringing it to our awareness. We then surveyed other women at our Friday night outreach and found that, yes, indeed, there were other women who had been attacked at that same spot. So we took it to the authorities at that point.
And so this you brought it to the attention of different people a few months ago. What was the response like?
We had a tremendously quick response from all of the city officials. The chief of police, Michael Geyer, our city councilman, our county commissioner, the mayor's office, and the code enforcement division all responded to us within 24 hours. And I'll throw in Commander Yara too, the Southeast Command Station for Albuquerque Police Department. So they took action. Particularly, I think that Commissioner Maggie Hart Stebbins took some really rapid steps to get this done quickly. And to our great pleasure, 2 months later, lights went up. And a very dangerous locale was hopefully made safe.
Have you heard any feedback from the people you work with about whether the lights are helping?
Not at this point. But what we have had feedback about is the happiness from our clients that something was done on their behalf, that just to know that the city took measures to increase their safety, it appears to have brought a lot of joy.
Do you think public officials acknowledge or understand that bad lighting creates spaces that can be hotspots for crime or dangerous for folks in vulnerable situations?
I hope they do. I can't say that for a fact, but it appears to be the case considering how quickly they took action. And I know that there are other people in the community, some who are in this forum today, and yourself, who are helping to increase awareness about that, particularly in the International District, where there seems to be a dearth of lighting, and apparently community members are taking that upon themselves, buying their own community street lights, etc. So the situation is improving.
Were you surprised by the quick response?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We were prepared for, a year, 2 years wait on this.
Bernadette Hardy is the co-coordinator of the International District Healthy Communities Coalition, which took on paying for and putting up their own streetlights after they'd been asking for years with no luck. Good morning, Bernadette.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Hearing this story from Kathleen about the fast response to her concerns, what are your first thoughts?
I'm totally shocked because we've been asking for extra streetlights for decades.
Yeah. And what's been happening? What usually happens? You call, you talk about broken streetlights, mm-hmm. You talk about more lights. What happens?
Well, in the beginning, we were doing street assessments and seeing which lights were on and off. And we had this big confusion of whose lights belong to who, city, county, PNM, not PNM. So it took a while to figure out what the process was, is to write down this number on the pole and report it. Then later on, they came out with the ABQ app, so you can report broken streetlights. It still takes a while before they're fixed. Right now, a lot went out in Zuni and San Pedro, and those are still out. And I'm very shocked that she got a quick response, because it took generations for us to even get something fixed.
And that's, years and years of calls, of surveying the lights, it's not like it was once a year or something. Like, you guys have been working on this kind of around the clock, right?
Yes, because of pedestrian fatalities as well, we wanted to make the community more vibrant and get people more active, and also to reduce the crime. So that's proven to reduce crime in the community. But we couldn't do that with the broken street lights and being at really dark places. So that's one of our motivations as well.
Do you have a hope that this quick turnaround for StreetSafe in this one instance, with lots of public agencies kind of working together, could mean that there's a shift here for the better with streetlights?
Well, I hope so. With more people and organizations seeing the inequities in the community, hopefully it just helps bring more attention to the problem, and hopefully it can get fixed faster.
Enrique Cardiel is the executive director of the Bernalillo County Community Health Council. He also lives in the International District. Thanks for being here this morning, Enrique.
Thanks for having me.
What do you think? Why do you think StreetSafe got such a quick response from the city for more lighting? And do you think it means more lights are coming to the district overall?
Well, I hope more lights are coming from the district. On the positive side, I could look at it as you have years of people asking for lights, there's been some response from the administration. So now we're in a situation where people are responsive to that. There's the more cynical side of, when you have communities of color specifically asking for stuff slower. Hopefully that's not the case. Hopefully it's just that we've made lighting an issue and that now we have an administration that's responsive to that. But our experience has been, reporting for many years and not having much of any response. Even when the mayor was senator and put in money for street lighting, it took about 8 or 9 years for those lights to get through. So it's very, it's amazing, and hopefully something that will cause optimism that appropriate lighting will get put in as we go. Just like when the young boy was hit on Trumbull in Louisiana, and there's been really not much change there. And somebody was hit on Northeast Louisiana less than a few months later, and there's a hawk light there, like, immediately. So I think just the reality of some things have changed and other things are still kind of not quite equitable. It's important to pay attention to.
And when the boy was hit, the lights were broken on the streetlights. You can see that in the news coverage of that event. And the other thing that we found through our reporting on the pedestrian fatalities aspect of this is that hundreds of thousands of dollars did come down from the state legislature to install lights. And in some cases, they just never were installed, and the money went back to the to the general fund. Bernadette, you've been working on this so long. Do you feel like you've been heard by public officials?
Not really, but I'm just glad some change is happening.
Kathleen, we've heard, we're hearing this story of the long fight for these lights, and the work that the coalition and other individuals have been doing calling for lighting. Do you have any thoughts about why things moved so quickly after you reached out to the city?
Well, it might have something to do with the fact that StreetSafe is very, we put it out there to the public what we're doing, and we don't hold back when we're unhappy with what's going on at the city level. Our executive director, Christine Barber, is very forthright with the community about where there might be failings. As well, I serve on the Southeast Area Community Policing Council. So I would say it's true that I have some pretty strong connections to APD, to the chief of police, and to the mayor as a result of being on that council. Nonetheless, I would say that what the other folks in this room today are doing is incredible, because it's building the impetus broadly to get this broader problem fixed, which is, lighting overall in the International District. And so I want to just say a congratulations to everyone who's putting in the hard work.
Bernadette, International District Healthy Communities Coalition does a lot of really public talking about this, too. On Twitter, you've used different strategies to try to draw attention, right?
Yes. Enrique started Twittering the lights and tagging the mayor and other public officials. That helped a lot. That really motivated things to move faster. And then with the implement of the 1ABQ app, as well as with the needle pickup, it's just been a good improvements. It's just taken so long for any change.
Brittany Ortiz is the deputy director with Albuquerque's Office of Equity and Inclusion. Good morning, Brittany.
Good morning, Marisa.
When you're hearing this story, you're hearing about how some people were working a long time and then there was this quick response. Do you have any thoughts about why these things unfolded this way?
Yeah, absolutely. I sort of want to echo Kathleen's sort of honoring of, the long years of work that the IDHCC and Bernadette and Enrique have put in. I think the Keller administration is really sort of attuned to the real sort of structural inequities that exist, especially in places like the International District that are primarily communities of color, that are low-income communities, high incidence of limited English proficiency, things like that. And knowing that these communities have historically been underinvested, we know that the lights are not evenly distributed across the city, and that there is fewer lights in the International District, and that's led to pedestrian fatalities, that's led to higher rates of crime. And I think that the Keller administration, from his time in the state legislature, has really been interested in sort of dismantling some of these structural inequities and investing in places like the International District that have been totally underinvested. And so I think that we are hoping to continue to send resources to places like the International District. we announced a couple of months ago that we were going to put in 8 more of the solar lights that we had put in by Phil Chacombe Park that Kathleen was referencing. Those two, we're going to put in 8 more by the end of the year. Some of that money came from the Bernalillo County Commission. Some of that came from that funding that Mayor Keller had directed when he was a state senator. And then we're excited to announce today that we have funding for an additional 9 through the Albuquerque City Council. So there will be a total of 17 brand new streetlights going in the International District. And, you know, we're trying to think really strategically about where those go in terms of, you know, where pedestrian fatalities have happened and, you know, where public safety needs are the most. So
we're talking about street lighting and public safety. Do you have a good relationship with your neighbors? In the evenings, are you able to walk around your neighborhood, wave hello to folks? Is your area lit well? And does it feel safe? Give us a call at 277-5866. Tweet us with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. We're going to take a quick break.
The Fall Fundraiser is a big event at KUNM. Hundreds of community volunteers come in to help answer phones, and we are inviting you to be part of it. If you have good typing skills and handwriting, be a phone volunteer. The training is easy. We send you a short video to watch at home with all the instructions. To sign up to answer phones for our Fall Fundraiser on September 7th through the 13th, visit KUNM.org and click Help Answer Phones.
I'm Maria Hinojosa, and next time on Latino USA, we enter the United States Senate chamber.
Senate will come to
and follow the senators as they try to reform our immigration system. The twist? They're all in the fourth grade.
We're 10.
She's 10.
I'm 10. I'm 9.
That's next time on Latino USA.
That's Latino USA, Monday mornings at 8 a.m. on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Marisa DeMarco. We're talking about street lighting across the city and around the state and its relationship to crime, safety, and community today. And we want to hear from you. Do you think streetlights are a public safety issue? Do you consider unlit areas unsafe at night? Are there dark spots in your neighborhood that could benefit from lights? What can be done about these issues? Give us a call at 277-5866. Bernadette, we were just hearing about some new lighting projects. They announced some new lighting projects, solar-powered lights, right?
That's correct, yeah.
And the solar-powered lights kind of enable you to not have to go through PNM to get those lights put up, Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, what's great about those lights, too, is that it doesn't cost the taxpayers any extra money. We don't have to sort of spend any more on our electricity bill. They're really easy to put in. Yeah, we're really excited about the solar piece of that.
And that's something that IDHCC has been doing for 5 years or more, right? Like, yeah. you identify this
so
issue.
We've been saying these things. Even with the buses, there's other older cities who have electric buses that have that little wire that connects. And I've seen them. I went to other cities, and I was like, there's no excuse for our city not keeping up with making things just better. There's no excuse. I'm totally happy that it's happening, but it's like I get kind of frustrated because we've been trying to tell them these things for years.
Yeah, and you've been doing solar powered lights, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a call now from Lewis in Albuquerque. Good morning, Lewis.
Hi. I have apartments in the International District near Catherine and San Mateo. It's on Madeira Drive, some small fourplexes, and across the street are some much larger apartment buildings. There's a lot of pedestrian traffic. And the lighting has been terrible on our street. It's between Catherine Avenue and Anderson Avenue. It's just awful. But they did finally, about a year or 2 years ago, put a second light in the middle of the street. So the north end of the street is okay, but the south end, where my apartments are, is terrible. It's still very dark, and I've had 2 of my tenants attacked at night walking. There's been 4 murders. within about 700 yards of the of my apartments this year alone. The notorious 7-Eleven at Catherine Avenue in San Mateo is not that far away, and it's had another murder this year. It's had four murders in the last 3 years. This street still needs another light towards the south end. There's one on Anderson, but it faces Anderson, so it doesn't help Madeira. And anyway, it's really frustrating because in the past I have tried to contact counselor, the city, and we don't get anything. But I don't know how that middle light got installed last year or 2 years ago. It really helps, but we need one more light on that street, and it would be great if we could get something.
All right, thanks for your call. And I just want to jump in here and say that we got crime data for 5 years in Albuquerque, and our data does show that in at least two neighborhoods in Albuquerque, we just kind of started looking at this, where residents raised concerns about bad lighting, that would be the International District and also Barelas. On average, more crimes happen at night there than in those neighborhoods than elsewhere in the city. So we are seeing that trend emerge in the data. And if you're listening in this morning, we want to hear from you. Do you think streetlights are a public safety issue? Do you consider unlit areas unsafe at night? And are there dark spots in your neighborhood that could benefit from lights? And what can be done about these issues? Give us a call at 277-5866. Bernadette, we're hearing from people now about, you know, some of the effects of bad lighting. How has this affected you as a resident of International District?
Actually, where that last caller is right where I live as well. And that street is really, when we did an assessment, most of the lighting in that street comes from residents' homes. So the apartment complex has either a motion sensor. The poles are really far and few between, so they definitely do need some type of pole to be installed to increase the lighting in these little neighborhood streets. Like I said, we were giving people streetlights. We can't put them on a structure. We would give them the streetlight, and they could put it onto their building so it can have it's a motion sensor. So we were awarding those lights to owners of homes or it was hard to get owners of apartments because we would have to find the owner. So that was the only boundary for that. But if he would like a light, he can contact me and I can give him a couple.
How does it affect your kind of day-to-day life when there's an area by your house that is dark and you know, feels maybe unsafe?
Yeah, I have a 12-year-old, so he's not allowed to go out past a certain time. We live across from Wilson Pole. I had my nephews robbed at gunpoint, so it's super dangerous. I'm very fearful for my kid.
And does it kind of change your behavior when you decide to walk somewhere? Do you go in groups? How do you navigate that?
We kind of laugh about it because that's really all we can do. It was like, you guys go in a group, ha ha ha, you know, be careful. We tend to do everything in groups. We want to start a walking club soon, and we just need to make sure that, you know, we have large groups with us and take care of each other.
Enrique, you know, we're talking about the International District, and I know that sometimes it has a bad rap for crime, and sometimes there can be stigma and stereotype around crime in the area. How does that affect people who live there?
Well, I think the stigma part really does create just kind of a negative attitude. It creates a sense of, like, there's not hope in changing things, right? And I think that's important to work against. It's also important to look at some of the, you know, there's five or six neighborhood associations, depending how you mark off, you know, the district. And some of those neighborhood associations have the same population as a county in New Mexico, right? And so to look at that, you have all of that population living in a small area, and you know, look at crime in that context. It's really, gets reported in a way that makes it look like it's more than it is. Not saying that it's, you know, doesn't have issues, but it's just become something that it's very easy to perceive there being more crime than there is. And not saying that there isn't things that happen, you know, there's been homicides on my street. I live by a 24-hour all-subs, so, you know, there's traffic and noise and all of that stuff that comes. You know, I have a light in my yard from IDHCC, you know, because that was something that's needed and helpful. And so I think really just looking at, sure, there's a lot of things going on, and there's a big context as to why it is, right? The population, it's the most populated part of the entire state, right? So to think that there might not be a lot of crime, right, in this 4-square-mile area doesn't make sense, right? We know, like, more compact people are, right? And then you top that off with higher number of working class and low-income folks, right? And so, yeah, you're going to have lots of issues. And those can be addressed, right? And part of that is the community building part that IDHCC and other folks do, right? There's a network of folks that, you know, we're all working on creating, right, in our different groups. And I think that's important, right? When we went door to door years ago talking about getting GEDs, we asked neighbors, like, do you feel safe? I mean, what's the most important, you know, benefit of your community? And 7 out of 10 people felt safe. And, you know, most people, more than half, listed their neighbors as, like, the reason they liked the neighborhood. And I know the reality is, as an adult male, my walking around at night is different than if I were a female or if I was a younger person, right? And just that reality. But that's also true anywhere in the city. Mm-hmm. And so just to kind of, like, not just paint this as, like, the world's worst neighborhood, right? Because even in Albuquerque, if you look at per person, you know, it's depending on what year you're looking at, it's not always the highest. It's not always, you know, the most dangerous. It's not all of that. There's a whole variety of places that have that. They just don't have the stigma. The news doesn't cover it, right? There's less population, so numerically there's less crimes, and so it doesn't get in the news as often.
Do you think lights can help create a sense of community cohesion?
Oh, absolutely. I think if you go to different cities, even different parts of Albuquerque where there's lighting, right, people feel more comfortable coming out at night, right? My light needs to get fixed, but when it was working, people would tell me how much they appreciated having the light, right? Being able to walk their dogs early in the morning or late at night and knowing, like, if they felt uncomfortable, there's a space, you know, on the block where they can go and the light will turn on and, you know, they can pretend their dog's doing what it's got to do and just kind of hang out till they feel like things are better. So I think lighting makes a huge difference. The type of lighting is important, right? We don't want a bunch of floodlights that makes you feel like you're being watched, but, you know, lighting that makes you feel like you're supposed to be outside.
Do you guys ever hear pushback from people who feel like lights are surveillance?
I think people feel surveillance in general, right? People noticed cameras that have gone up in the International District. So I think, again, like floodlights, right, make people feel upset. Like there was a period of a couple of years where a lot of things were happening to my property, my cars and stuff. So I installed a floodlight by the garage and, like, got feedback about that. Like, people were like, wow, that's really bright. And that, you know, some people were happy and some people were like, you know, now I can't just kind of walk around. And it's like, well, you know, I want everybody to feel like they can walk around.
Brittany, you're here with Albuquerque's Office of Equity and Inclusion. Do you think this is an equity issue?
Absolutely. I think that the built environment is one of the biggest equity issues that we're facing in Albuquerque. I think that, you know, resources have sort of not been distributed equitably in the city for a very, very long time. And I think neighborhoods that are primarily communities of color have been sort of the biggest sort of bearers of that burden. You know, I think that there's a difference between equality and equity, right? And if we sort of at this point, you know, when there is structural inequity happening in the city, when we distribute resources equally across all neighborhoods in the city, it ends up being inequitable because there are neighborhoods and communities that need more resources than others. And I think the Keller administration has really tried to address this. So one of the very first things that we did when we came in, we were working on our capital improvement resolution. And for the first time ever, we put in language that said that we would direct capital improvement dollars to historically underinvested neighborhoods. And, you know, we have really worked to make that true. So absolutely, it's an equity issue. It's something that my office thinks about daily. We talk to Enrique and Bernadette about it a lot. And yeah, absolutely.
And when we're talking about infrastructure, I mean, we mean things like streetlights, which is what we're talking about today, but also parks, sidewalks that are functional, that are ADA compliant. Yep. You're talking about potholes in the street, usable streets, even the speed of streets and how big those streets are. What else? What else is infrastructure?
So we also think about things like libraries and community centers. You know, we're sort of working on an international district library. We're working on the Singing Arrow Community Center. You know, those are definitely not equitably spread across the city. Child development centers. I mean, there's a ton of these resources that really need to be addressed and redirected in an equitable way.
So lighting has long also been a concern at the University of New Mexico, which is where we're broadcasting from. And we've got Lieutenant Trace Peck from UNM's Police Department here today to talk about it. Lieutenant Peck has been with the university for 11 years. And before that, he worked for the Albuquerque Police Department patrolling the southeast part of town. Do you think good or bad lighting has had an effect on crime on campus?
Oh, I think it definitely has an effect on crime on campus. You know, one of President Stokes' main concerns was safety when she, you know, took office here. And in return, you know, we budgeted and sent requests for money with the legislation specifically for video cameras to be placed in every parking lot and every public area that, you know, was feasible to put a camera. We did receive funding for that, and we're moving in that direction. We're hoping to have every parking lot and major public area under video surveillance within a couple of years. And with that, you know, comes lighting. Those cameras aren't cheap, so we want to utilize them the best we can. And with that, you know, we're continually looking at the lighting surrounding those cameras so we can get the best use of those video cameras.
Do you ever hear pushback about surveillance, about cameras, and do you ever hear from folks?
Not at all, just for the positive. We have a mobile camera unit that we can place in any, you know, we consider a hotspot, great feedback. Every time we're putting it up or taking it down, we get feedback. People that are parking in there or walking there and saying, thank you so much for having that. I think it really makes a difference.
Do you think it makes sense to consider lighting a factor in crime in other parts of the city?
Oh, most definitely. You know, I worked the neighborhood, Trumbull Neighborhood Association. We did the marches 30 years ago up and down the International District, you know, and they had a lot of positive things about putting down the roundabouts before they came to be in that district. You know, that made a huge difference with the lighting around those.
Yeah. We're going to take a call now from Ellen in Albuquerque. Good morning, Ellen.
Good morning, Marissa and crew. No, I just want to say that the I used to live in the that same area with Central Louisiana. And I remember how dark that used to be right there. So I'm just glad that the lighting issue is being addressed. Because I also would go to the, there's a poetry group over at The Source, which is by the Michael Thomas Coffee. And that at night after dark used to be really, really dark right there. And all I had was just a tiny little light right there. Plus a flashlight, which helped me out. But I've noticed the past few months or so that there's a light right there, and I'm very grateful because it's so hard to see. And that way, at least the sun van can find us when it's time so that they can pick us up to take us home. Mm-hmm. So I just thought I'd point that out. Lights do make a difference, and I have to wholeheartedly applaud all of you for pitching in and doing the work.
All right. Thanks for your call this morning, Ellen. We're talking about the relationship between the built environment, that means street lighting, parks, and even uninhabited or unused spaces, and crime. This is Let's Talk New Mexico, and I'm Marisa DeMarco. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
And then there's an additional problem. Suppose you even overcame that, and you had the resources, and now you could speak and you could reach a lot of people. And what if you then were in that position and you had nothing to say? Freedom of speech is meaningless if the sources of information are controlled.
This edition of AR features Howard Zinn on Second Thoughts on the First Amendment.
That's Alternative Radio, Saturday night at 6 on KUNM.
Is the New Mexico heat too much for that old engine? If your old car or truck just can't take it anymore, if it keeps letting you down, now's the time to let it go and turn it into great radio. KUNM's vehicle donation program turns old cars and trucks into a membership plus a tax deduction for you. And it's an easy way to help keep great programming on KUNM. Condition doesn't matter as long as it has an engine. It just takes one phone call to 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Marisa DeMarco, and today we're talking about street lighting and crime. Do you think bad lighting is a public safety issue? Do you consider unlit areas dangerous at night? And are there dark spots in your neighborhood that could benefit from lights? What can be done about these problems? Do you think better lighting could help slow crime around where you live? And is this important to you? We want to hear from you. Give us a call at 277-5866. Tweet us with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. Brittany, when we think about crime, we talk about crime so much in Albuquerque. When we think about crime, we're often thinking about individual behaviors. Is there a way to shift the conversation so that we can look at it look at systemic or environmental factors as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that that's been sort of the whole push of the Keller administration's focus on tackling crime from all sides. It's really not about, it's less about individual bad actors and more about these sort of structural issues, the structural inequities. It's about streetlights. It's about access to early childhood education. It's about, you know, all of these sort of structural things that have been in place for a really long time. And if we can address those big sort of structural pieces to crime, we really believe that that will have an effect on overall crime, and that sort of trying to find these, you know, individual bad actors is not as effective as sort of addressing these real structural issues that exist in our community.
We did also see, though, a couple months ago, in an effort to combat violent crime, state police officers came to Albuquerque. We heard from a number of people in the international district and in that area that they felt like the police presence got really, really heavy in that area. How do you both talk about this systemically and then acknowledge that, you know, some populations are getting a lot of police interaction, a lot of law enforcement in their communities?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is an ongoing learning process for everybody, you know, and again, you know, I love to say tackling crime from all sides, because that's sort of, it sort of was like a brain explosion for me when I first started thinking about how so many things matter to crime rates. And I think that talking about the built environment in conjunction with crime is really exciting for me, because I think that's something that that is not only effective at combating crime, but also effective at community building at the same time. And I love that that's something that we're focusing on.
And you're talking about, you know, investments in lights, investments in other aspects of the community. But how do you restore trust with that community when they're also experiencing heavy law enforcement presence, for instance?
That's a great question. And that's something that I think about a lot. You know, there is a lot of mistrust in the community, and not just because of policing, because of this underinvestment that we've been talking about, because of, you know, facing municipal governments that just aren't listening to really valid arguments about sort of lighting and crime and things like that. I think that the best work we can do right now is a lot of really humble listening, a lot of really humble sort of coming to the community and saying, how can we best interact with you? How can we best receive information from you and give information back to you. I think there's a great opportunity with these 9 new lights that are going to go up to really have some deep community engagement about where they need to be in the International District. I'd love to hear from the people in this room, from the people on the phone, about sort of the best ways that we can sort of think about doing that community engagement around where we should put, you know, these resources. But yeah, I mean, I think that there it's a long road to go in terms of restoring trust with communities that have been totally marginalized.
Enrique, Bernadette, we're hearing about some solutions, some things that are kind of in the works. Does this seem sufficient to you?
Well, I think it's helpful. We have to look at, again, this 4-square-mile area that's the most populated in the state, right? And 9 or 20 lights, really, how much impact does that have, right? Saw in the news the other day, you know, that people around lead and coal want that to be fixed again. Right, and in the last 10 years, there's been $25 million spent on fixing lead and coal. And we haven't even spent the $4 million to fully implement the Zuni safety plan. Right, so I think just kind of looking at building that trust is really going to take some fast movement, some investment. I think it's helpful, but building that trust is going to really take, you know, a large amount of work. In a way that we're not used to. We respond to things. You know, the reality is we responded to the opioid crisis in Albuquerque and Bernalillo County when a young white woman overdosed, right, who was the child of a developer, right, when other communities had opioid overdose problems for decades. You know, so I think it's really going to take, like, some serious heroic level action, right? We in the International District, again, like, we're talking about the library and the Zuni safety plan, but then there's also, like, we're going to invest a lot of money in more, you know, a larger police station, substation, right, which could have some benefits, but there's a lot of folks who are going, okay, well, you're increasing the policing of our community, right, and we're still waiting for a library, we're still waiting for the street, we're still waiting for lights. So I think there's just a lot of moving parts that the city and county and state need to think about in order to make this stuff real, right? The fact that neighbors are putting up their own lights with poles and solar lights you get from Lowe's or Home Depot really says a lot. It says a lot about the community that it's willing to kind of take charge that way. But it also said, you know, it's a reflection of the lack of support that's been there for decades, right? I think the first time I reported lights out on Central was like 2010, 2012, around that time period, you know, and I'm still reporting lights out. And those are lights that exist, right? It's not even like where we need lights. We had told some elected officials there's lighting needs on Louisiana near Gibson a month or so before the mom was run over by the drag racing guys. You know, we've told APD and city and state and county folks, like, here's where we need, like, a 4-way stop sign the day before, APD and somebody had an accident at that intersection. So we just have this history of knowing, like, we were asking for investment, right? We're doing some of our own work and stepping up, you know, and we feel like, you know, there needs to be a proportional meet. And, you know, to be fair, there is more going on in this administration than there has been in the past. You know, we have to be fair on that. But it's still, like, what needs to happen for people to really feel like, hey, we can trust that the city cares about us. It's going to take a lot more.
Lieutenant Peck, we're talking about investments in communities and then also sometimes really heavy patrols in areas with high crime rates, which can start to really wear on people who live in those communities. You also patrolled this area for a lot of your career. How do you think about this stuff?
You know, I spent about 15 years in the Southeast Air Command. Fortunately, most of it was on day shift hours. But it's always been an issue. In the early 90s, you know, Zuni was, pedestrians were every weekend. Somebody, especially during state fair time, there was a lot of added pedestrian traffic, and we were seeing at least once a week a pedestrian, you know, getting hit on Zuni. You know, technology the way it is today, I think the LED lighting coming to be is going to make a big difference. You know, I live outside the city, but when I come in, they replace the LED lights along I-40 as you come down the canyon. Huge difference, night and day difference. So it'd be nice to see that kind of technology moving into the International District. But I think Commander Yara and Lieutenant Gonzalez and their community policing strategy and what they're trying to get out and going door to door is making a big impact right now.
Brittany, we often hear about the expense of streetlights and infrastructure, but crime can get really expensive too. How do we choose where to invest public money? Like, how do we choose which areas get more lights and which areas get more police patrols?
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to respond to Commander Peck's discussion about the LED lights. We did last year convert all city lights into LED lights, both city and PNM lights. The city gave $1.7 million to PNM to help encourage and support this this shift. We also really encouraged PNM to start with that transition process in the International District, knowing that there were so many lights out, and that, you know, that's again, the places where we really want to invest. You know, in thinking about where we sort of put resources, we really are looking at, you know, neighborhoods that have been underinvested, that have high proportions of low-income folks that could sort of really benefit from this investment. I think the sort of balance between, you know, where we sort of put limited taxpayer funds in terms of, you know, like really sort of traditional policing public safety versus the sort of new way of thinking about public safety in terms of resources and infrastructure and services, that's tricky. And I think that's something that we're still trying to figure out. And I think that, you know, we can continue moving forward having those conversations in the same room. And that's something that I've been really impressed with the Keller administration is, you know, there's an internal interdepartmental working group around public safety that includes not just police and fire, but family and community services, parks. You know, we're trying to sort of think about crime and neighborhoods more holistically rather than sort of like, here is policing over here and over here we have like services and resources. We want to think about how those things work together.
We're going to take a call now from Charles. Good morning, Charles.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes. Yeah. I want to thank KUNM and everyone that showed up today to speak on this issue. We need to continue discussing this issue and make sure we do get more lighting. The deal is that the cost of these lights are pretty expensive. When we go up to Santa Fe legislative session to ask for capital outlay, we are faced with that. What many don't understand, though, is that the cost of not installing these lights is far greater to all of Albuquerque, not just the International District. So it would behoove this city to start repairing the lights that are out and installing new LED lights. It would cost this city far less in calls for service to do so.
Yeah, Charles, when you're thinking about the cost, are you thinking about the financial costs of these accidents, of crimes, the cost of life? What are you thinking about in terms of costs?
A cost of crime, property damage, and just those in and of themselves are enough to justify putting in a $5,000 aluminum pole.
Yeah. Brittany.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about the cost piece. You know, I think Charles, you're absolutely right. You know, there are just innumerable costs in terms of life and sort of community feelings of community and things like that that totally outweigh any sort of, you know, money we can spend on an aluminum pole. But I also want to note that we have found ways to also get that cost down, which is super exciting. So we were originally, so the two lights we put in by Phil Chacon, those were like $23,000. And we were like, you know, this is important and we're going to do it. They were $23 each. And we worked with our partner CityLoom to find a new manufacturer. And now we're getting lights for $6,000 a piece, and which is why we're able to do these 17 in the near future, and hopefully many more after that. So, you know, not to say that like we're nickel and diming this, because, you know, it really, we would rather just put up lights all day than have people sort of, you know, all this crime and all this stuff. But we are also working on ways to save the taxpayers money while we do this, which I think is exciting.
Kathleen Burke, StreetSafe New Mexico.
Thanks, Marisa. A couple things I'd like to comment on quickly. On the equity issue and how do we get more things done in the International District, for example, encourage your neighbors to vote. Areas with high voter turnout get more attention. That's just the reality. And so for everyone here in the room today, everyone listening who feels like their neighborhood needs more attention, please make sure to vote in every election, and make sure to encourage your neighbors to do the same. It really makes a difference. In addition to that, there was the question of, well, how did we get these lights put up so quickly at the reservoir station? And I want to be sure to give credit where credit is due. I do think, I want to piggyback on what Brittany's been saying, the Keller administration has been very sensitive to the needs of women and underserved areas. And in addition to that, I want to give credit to the Albuquerque Police Department. The department has set up what's called the High-Risk Victims Coordinated Community Response. And so we're talking about very high-risk victims here, and that includes women and homeless women. And so because APD is putting this focus on homeless women being such an at-risk population, I think that also was reason to get this job done quickly, because the victims who were being assaulted at the reservoir station are certainly fall into the high-risk, marginalized population. And so I want to congratulate the city and congratulate APD on putting some focus on that population and for doing the work to back up what they're saying. Thank you.
We're really close to the end, but I just want to jump on the voting thing. Do you think public officials prioritized resources in areas where there's more voter turnout?
I mean, I sort of see it as a chicken and an egg problem. I mean, I think that there's likely to be higher voter turnout in places where there are higher income folks, white communities, older communities, and those tend to be the places that have been invested in over the years. They tend to be places that are not within the center of the city. So, you know, it's hard to sort of follow that causal arrow, whether it's, and it's probably both, right? That, you know, that as these sort of groups are more likely to vote, they're in places that are more likely to get resources, they're more likely, you know, so it's sort of an iterative process, I think. But, you know, I do think it's super important for everybody to vote and to be involved.
We're coming to the end of the hour today. Thank you for joining us on Let's Talk New Mexico. Bernadette Hardy of the International District Healthy Communities Coalition, Enrique Cardiel of the Bernalillo County Community Health Council, Kathleen Burke of Street Safe New Mexico, Lieutenant Trace Peck from the UNM Police Department, and Brittany Ortiz with Albuquerque's Office of Equity and Inclusion. Thanks, everyone. If you missed any of our program, or if you'd like to share it with friends, the audio of this show will be posted to our website, KUNM.org, where you can also find previous shows. Join us next week as we look at how the Trump administration's new endangered species regulations could affect recovery of animals like the Mexican gray wolf and the Rio Grande silvery minnow. Thanks to Marino Spencer, our engineer today. Taylor Velasquez screened your calls. Rice Dix live tweeted the show. And Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Marisa DeMarco. This is KUNM.